I thought that with the holiday last week, we'd have a shortage of political news to discuss, but that certainly is not the case by a long shot. We probably won't even get to all the issues before we run out of time, so we want to get right to it. First, here's how you get involved. You can call our toll-free number, 800-486-8655. That's 800-486-8655. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Again, it's 800-486-8655 or talk@wpr.org. My guest this morning is Ed Miller, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Good morning, Professor Miller, and welcome to the program. Okay, I do not hear Professor Miller, so we've got a technical problem someplace along the line, which I trust that our technical staff will rectify shortly. Well, let's talk about some of the political news. There's certainly been lots of chocolate ice cream striking the oscillating air-moving device over the last few days. Let's start with international news. We have the ongoing escalation of violence in the Gaza Strip, Israeli planes bombing key targets of Hamas, who had shot 40 rockets into Israel, and a violation of the ceasefire. Now we have a massive retaliation by Israeli warplanes, and it looks as though they're preparing for a ground invasion of the Gaza. Well, what's that got to do politically with things going on in this country?
Are you there, guest?
I'm still here.
All right, sorry for the trouble.
We have Israeli airstrikes in Gaza kind of affecting the hopes that President-elect Barack Obama will take office with a clear path toward Middle East peace. Excuse me. That would be one effect. So we'll have more discussion about that. You can join our discussion, by the way, in case you just joined us. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And you can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. And I believe we now have our guest with us on board, Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. Professor Miller, are you there? Okay, I still don't hear Professor Miller. So we're in a new studio today, and we're still working some of the bugs out of how that works. Meanwhile, over in on the border between India and Pakistan, we have Pakistani troops massing along the borders, and that is going to have a lot of far-reaching implications. We have a pair of nuclear powers and a stare down, and meanwhile, moving those troops to the border means that Pakistan is shifting troops away from the Afghanistan border, and that makes things easier for the terrorists and Taliban forces that the NATO military forces and our own men and women in uniform are battling over in Afghanistan. So lots to talk about there. Let's see. What else we got? We have a political kerfuffle involving a parody song, which was first used on the Rush Limbaugh program a long time ago and has now been resurrected by I've got too many pieces of paper. And anyway, at any rate, one of the people who is running for chairman of the Republican Party distributed this piece of audio, which is titled Barack the Magic Negro, to the people who would be voting on whether he gets to be RNC chairman or not. And there's been some political fallout from that. The current chairman of the Republican Party is shocked that this parody was sent out. Meanwhile, Ken Blackwell, who's also campaigning for that position, doesn't think it's that big a deal. We'll talk about that. And let's see, what else going on? In New York, we have Caroline Kennedy, who is continuing to be under some scrutiny now from the media as she hopes to become the replacement for Senator Hillary Clinton. And Senator Clinton is confirmed as Secretary of State, of course, she'll vacate her Senate seat. And the governor of New York, Governor David Paterson, will appoint someone to fill that term. And there's been quite a bit of back and forth in the newspapers and online about Caroline Kennedy and what she has to say about various issues or doesn't have to say. Here's a report. A top advisor to President-elect Barack Obama said yesterday on Meet the Press on NBC that the country's slowing economy won't keep the new administration from fulfilling its plans for a middle-class tax cut. So we have that to talk about. Why don't you join us here? We'll take your calls at 800-486-8655. We'll run without a guest for just a moment. 800-486-8655 or talk at WPR.org. That's the email address. That might actually be easier right now. Here's an interesting political story, and this is pure politics here. It doesn't involve any international news or anything like that. With all of the cabinet choices that the Obama administration, the incoming Obama administration, has been making, this has caused a ripple of issues through state politics, with a lot of behind-the-scenes jockeying to fill key vacancies. And that's been highlighted a little bit more by the controversy, the scandal, if you will, in Illinois over filling Barack Obama's Senate seat. Of course, Governor Blagojevich has been accused of trying to sell that Senate seat, and he is facing an impeachment hearing. There are a lot of other states where Obama appointees are coming from, and a lot of state offices that are going to be vacant, and some Senate seats as well that will be vacant and will have to be appointed. And there'll be probably even some special elections. And interestingly enough, Republicans are looking at this as an opportunity to maybe take back some seats in the House and or Senate that they lost, some numbers that they lost in the recent 2008 election. Another area of controversy, Barack Obama has invited Rick Warren, the pastor of the Saddleback Church in Colorado, to give the opening prayer at his inauguration. This has touched off some controversy as some liberal groups have objected to Warren's selection. David Axelrod, who is one of Obama's top advisors, strongly defended the selection recently, and so there's been some discussion about that. Well, we'll try and get to all of those things. Judging by the hiss I can hear in my headphones, I suspect that I may actually have a guest at this point.
Oh,
Professor Miller,
are
you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we're through now.
Great, wonderful. Well, technology is always great when it works and not so great otherwise. Well, I don't know if you've been able to hear my monologue for
some
the
of
last
it I heard.
10 minutes, but let me just re-welcome Professor Ed Miller. He's a professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. And I started off talking about some international issues. Let's talk about those first. You've got, first of all, the Hamas rocket attack on Israel, and then a massive retaliation with airstrikes, lots of bombs falling in the Gaza Strip. The UN is talking about a widespread panic there. Obviously, there's some that's a major political controversy, or will be in this country shortly.
Right. There was a ceasefire. You know, the Palestinians are divided now between the Hamas, which controls the Gaza Strip, and the Fatah, which controls the West Bank. And the Gaza Strip had been, since the war in 67, it had been under control of Israel, but then Israel handed the area back in exchange for essentially a ceasefire. Well, the latest ceasefire has ended, and when the ceasefire ended, the Hamas began shooting rockets and mortar fire into Israel. And about a week later, after a week of accepting those rockets and attempting to arrange an additional ceasefire, Israel then responded to that fire and pinpointing particularly their security forces. And so although others have been hit, I think about 70 or 80% of the individuals who have been hit in Gaza were members of the security forces. There's a attempt to call for a ceasefire now. Both Fatah has called for the ceasefire, as well as Egypt and the Arab Arab Council and the United Nations as well. And so it's a major problem that has now arisen. It's very somewhat similar to the problem that Israel had with regard to Lebanon when Hezbollah was shooting rockets into Israel, northern Israel, and then Israel responded, although the response at that time had various problems. They lacked sufficient intelligence about where Hezbollah was built in, and their actually execution wasn't very good. So they're attempting to rectify that in this situation.
And now it looks like they've called up, Israel has called up reserves. They have put some artillery units in place along the border. It appears that they are preparing for some sort of ground assault into the Gaza Strip.
Right, and it's a possibility that they would, although there's no intention of holding the Gaza Strip if they do that. Calling up security forces, reserves, is pretty typical in Israel, since there's a requirement that everyone serve in the military. There's some exceptions, very orthodox are accepted, and a couple others. But basically, everybody has to serve in the military, and once you serve in the military, you're then in the reserves.
You know, this is, in some ways, the way this thing kind of started out, it was a no-win scenario for the Israelis, in a way, because, you know, they can't just not do anything when Hamas is shooting rockets at them. And yet, any response that they make, well, again, we've seen protests in a number of other countries in the Middle East over the Israeli response. I didn't see any protests over the rocket attacks, but they're almost in a no-win situation. Whatever they do, they're going to be somebody's going to condemn them.
Exactly, they're in a very, very bad situation there, and their only hope is really to knock out the capacity of Hamas to fire the rockets into Israel by knocking out the military sites.
We are starting to get some phone callers now. I'm going to go to them, but first I think we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take some callers, and you could be one of them. There are lines available for you. It's All Things Political for Monday, the 29th of December, 2008. We won't be able to say 2008 for much longer, so better start practicing saying and writing 2009. 800-486-8655 is the phone number to reach the program. You can also reach us at talk@wpr.org. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 after 9. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Today, here's what's coming up a little bit later on today. After 4, Ben Maron's guest uncovers the secrets of the Blue Zones. 4 geographic regions, where people live long, full lives. He describes how to incorporate their lifestyle into yours. That's on At Issue after 4 o'clock today. This hour, it's All Things Political. And we have joining us by phone Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW Stevens Point, and we have callers as well. We're going to start with Alice in Oshkosh first. Alice, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Alice.
Hi. I have a request for more information. I heard you say that Hamas out of the blue starts firing these rockets, and then the Israelis Israel can't do nothing. They need to do something, but they're in a bad place, so they're firing back a little bit and hoping to damage the Hamas efforts to fire rockets. But I'm interested in why Hamas is firing rockets. I'm sure they didn't decide one day, hey, I have a good idea, let's start firing rockets. They must have some complaint, and I didn't hear anything about that side of it.
Well, Hamas's position mainly in Gaza, but Hamas's position in general, they're now in Gaza, but they had also been in the West Bank, and they've been sort of, for the moment, driven out of control of the West Bank. And the other part of Palestinian organization, which is essentially the Palestinian Authority, they have essentially disassociated themselves with Hamas. Hamas has been considered a terrorist organization. And so consequently, Hamas believes in the destruction of Israel. And so that's been their particular issue, and the idea that any Palestinian that had lived in Israel at the time in 1948 when Israel was formed can go back and retake any land that they had left at that particular time, that return. So that has essentially been Hamas's position. So Hamas, and there was an election, of course, that had taken place, and the strange thing was that Hamas had actually won the election over Fatah. And the reason they had won the election over Fatah is Fatah had been a pretty corrupt organization, particularly under Arafat. In addition to that, they were a pretty inefficient organization, unable to provide particularly social services. And they were also poor at running elections, because, in fact, what had happened is Fatah had put up several candidates, while Hamas had put up one candidate. So Hamas had gotten a majority of it, and they had taken over running the area in association with Fatah. They were both in sort of a coalition. Government, but what happened was Hamas began to engage in terrorist activities and so forth, and so they were being pretty much pushed out of the West Bank, and so where they are now is in the other part, which is Gaza, and they've taken over the Gaza area. But they had fired rockets before, and there was a ceasefire, and the ceasefire, as I say, ended.
Alice, thanks for the call. Let's move on to another topic. One of the things that came up yesterday on the TV talk shows on Sunday morning, a top advisor to President-elect Barack Obama said yesterday that the country's slowing economy won't keep the new administration from fulfilling its plans for a middle-class tax cut. Obama advisor David Axelrod told NBC's Meet the Press, quote, "We feel it's important that middle-class people get some relief now," unquote. And, Professor, we have a caller who actually wants to talk about a tax cut, so why don't we take him and then you can respond to that. We'll go to Jeff in Grays Lake, Illinois. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
How's it going?
Okay.
Great. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, all I'd like to say is, how is Barack Obama going to pay for this plan of his that's going to cost, up to $1 trillion, without raising taxes anywhere? He doesn't talk about raising taxes on the rich. And, he doesn't plan on bringing any troops home. He's just going to move them to Afghanistan. And, he doesn't talk about cutting any of our bloated military budget or, stopping any of our programs that don't work, the war on drugs, for instance. The last time I checked, people could get drugs anytime they wanted, no matter how real they are. So, I don't know. I just think that he's looking more and more like a Republican, and it doesn't seem like it's much change to me. And I'm, pretty pessimistic about the whole thing. This is the biggest economic crisis that, I've ever seen, because I'm 27 years old. So, it just doesn't look good. As far as the outlook, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, and, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Let Professor Miller respond.
Well, there's several responses. One is that there is some tax increases that will occur on the rich. That was the tax increases, particularly people making over $250,000. Now those have been deferred at least until. They expire around there, which is after 2010. And the reason they've been deferred for the moment anyway has been because of the economy has been so bad. So right now they're not going to increase taxes in that regard, at least at the moment. The second thing was they do plan on reviewing existing programs and cutting programs that don't seem to work. But there was other aspects of it. We're in, as Jeff mentioned, we're in a severe economic downturn. And so both monetary policy has pretty much run its course. We're down to a federal funds rate somewhere between 0 and 0.25. And so there's not it's very difficult in terms of reducing the interest rate. And so what you need is fiscal policy, and fiscal cut policy involves spending as well as tax reductions. And so the tax reductions are the ones that you made reference to. This is the middle class tax reductions, and they would be a payroll tax reduction so that they wouldn't occur where you get one check. Because what happened with the stimulus package where people got one check is they paid down some of their debt, and it really didn't increase demand in the economy. And so this, by reducing the amount on your the amount taken out of your check, your payroll tax, that in fact that will give people a little bit more money per check so that they can spend that money and stimulate the economy in that area. And plus, as you mentioned, there's vast spendings for infrastructure and all in the stimulus bill, which is estimated somewhere, let's say average, let's say another $700 billion in that area. All the money is not paid for. There's no question about that. Everybody agrees, whether Republicans or Democrats have agreed to that, but they all agree that it needs to be done because we're in such bad situation that ultimately an inflation may occur because of this, but we're not as worried about it right now because we're in such a very bad situation. When the patient is sort of dying, you have to give very strong medicine.
Well, as far as the payroll tax is concerned, now it seems to me that the first President Bush did something similar, but he didn't cut the tax rate, and so what happened was you got more in your paycheck, and then when you went to do your income tax form, you found out what kind of problem that was.
Well, no, this would reduce the tax rates.
Okay,
Tax reduction would equate with a reduction in the tax rate. So you would not have to owe that much more at the end of the year or anymore. It would be
okay.
It would be coordinated. But the whole question, and no one knows the answer to that in terms of paying for this ultimately. But as you know,
well, our great grandchildren are going to be paying for it. I mean, let's be honest.
Somebody will be paying for it, probably.
Yeah.
It's still a small portion of the gross domestic product. That's true. But it does increase, as you point out, certainly the amount of interest, because where you borrow the money, the amount of interest that the U.S. has to pay out. But on the other hand, the economy is so bad, we do know that we need to inject spending into that economy. This was the argument, was the problem during the Depression, that President Roosevelt, although had the New Deal, he was always concerned about a balanced budget. So even though when we had the New Deal, he kept the amount of injection of money into the economy relatively modest. And as a matter of fact, in 1937, he had actually had a tax increase to try to balance the budget. And only, although the Depression did lessen during that period of time, it certainly didn't disappear until the great infusion of money, which was World War II.
Yeah, well, let's try not to go back there. Let's take a call from Scott in Chippewa Falls.
Scott.
Chippewa Falls, yeah, well, I don't see the red bar on my screen, so we didn't get to Scott. Let's move on to another topic. One of the things I mentioned earlier in the program before we got hooked up, Professor, is the cabinet choices that President-elect Obama has made has touched off something of a scramble in the states as they try to see how they're going to replace some key people in various offices, whether they're state offices or members of Congress, congressional seats or Senate seats. Of course, there's the one in Illinois that's touched off a whole lot of scandal. But this is kind of a big deal for some of these states, and there could be some special elections coming up.
Right, and it's interesting to how many members of the Senate that he has chosen, which is, you know, both, you know, strikes both ways, because on one hand, he gets very experienced people working with the legislature, which is some of the problems of some previous presidents that didn't have nearly as experienced legislators in their various executive offices. But on the other hand, he loses these experienced people that he needed to work with in the legislature. So in both ways, there's a problem. But in each of the cases, there will be a Democrat appointed, because there's a Democratic governor, there will be a Democrat appointed, you know, to replace those individuals, including Biden. Now, Illinois, of course, we don't know what's going to happen. Many states, the governor makes the appointment, and then there's a special election.
Yeah, and the there was one story I saw. The Republicans are looking at this as an opportunity to maybe win back some seats that they lost.
Right, it could be. I mean, they're up in the Senate anyway. They are up either 58 or 59, depending on the Democrats. Either depending on what happens in, you know, Minnesota, which is still undecided. But it's not the 60 that is needed to break a filibuster, but it's getting pretty close to that. But if they lose a couple of those, you know, it just makes it more difficult. But it's not anticipated, at least in the next 2 years, that they will, because the individual appointed will be a Democrat. The one major exception could be Illinois, because there's a number of people who are now pressing for, rather than a gubernatorial appointment because of the situation, having the special election now, which of course allows a Republican possibly to win that office.
800-486-8655 or talk at WPR.org. That's how you get in on the program. And now we have Scott in Chippewa Falls. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I'd like to take us back to the Gaza Strip situation, Professor Miller. I've been, you know, listening, and to, you know, this conflict's been going on for quite some time. And now we have Hamas and Fatah both, you know, as two parties on the Palestinian side, you know, that's causing, you know, more controversy, I guess, on that side. But I seem to see this event as that, you know, they basically, the Palestinians are being somewhat, you know, starved, and their land is being taken away, and Israel is basically, you know, responsible for it. I heard that some aid ships had been turned around, denying aid to them. They're not allowed access to food and water. And to me, it's almost like, you know, Israel's doing the same thing to the Palestinians that we did to the American Indian, you know, a long time ago. And everybody kind of hears the Israel side of the story, but the Palestinians, oh, they shot some rockets. But I always kind of hear that they're being starved, and, you know, their land under that agreement is being denied them. Am I wrong?
Well, it's complex. With regard to the Gaza Strip, there is an attempt to cut off some. It's not so much even food. What's happening is there was not only food, but there was military equipment that was coming from Egypt through tunnels to the Gaza. And Egypt has tried to cut this off, and they haven't done it. And so therefore, what they're trying to cut off is not necessarily the food supply, but they're trying to cut off the military supply in those particular tunnels.
The effect of the blockade, though, is to cut off food supplies. They've also cut off electricity, have they not?
They may have. They may have, because they're attempting to gain a ceasefire, is what they're trying to do.
No, I think Scott's point was this has been ongoing for quite a while. This isn't a recent development. There have been a lot of stories in the press about, for example, there was a fact. I think this was on. I want to say this was a story that was covered on Morning Edition, or All Things Considered, and this was at least a year ago. They interviewed a person who owned he had a flourishing soda pop business, and he couldn't get any of the ingredients to continue to make soda. They weren't allowed to come in. So I mean, there have been some ongoing issues here with what can come in to the Gaza Strip and what can't. I think, and I think that's what Scott was referring to here.
Right. There's been problems with the Gaza Strip because of the Hamas situation in the Gaza Strip. And the Gaza Strip was an area in which that was under Israeli control, just as the West Bank has been. Mm-hmm. And so now the West Bank is basically being run by the Palestinian Authority, and the Gaza Strip was supposed to be run similarly by the same authority. But as I mentioned, that the Hamas and the Fatah had broken off. And so Hamas is in the Gaza Strip. And so what Israel has been doing is they have cut off various things during periods of time in which there's been military action against Israel. And they're attempting to not only to extend the ceasefire and ultimately get a peace agreement is what they're particularly interested in doing. And then they're, you know, in terms of land, the land in the West Bank is land that Israel has now said, pretty much most of the leaders in Israel have said, would be made into a Palestinian state, that they have accepted a Palestinian state there, but it requires a peace agreement for that state. And President Bush, actually the first president to have acknowledged or accept the Palestinian state. Right now, it's a temporary situation run by the Palestinian Authority in that area. But a formal state would be developed. There's obviously a lot of questions in terms of creating a formal state in that area. And one clear one would be what to do with Jerusalem.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a huge stumbling block to progress there.
Right.
Let me give the phone numbers again, because we have some lines that have opened up. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. That's a toll-free number. If you would like to send an email, the address is talk@wpr.org. Let's go next to John in Appleton and see what John has to say. John, good morning.
Well, good morning. Happy holidays to you guys.
And to you, too.
Thank you. I've got a couple issues to discuss. One is, I've been in conversation with Dr. Kagan here in Appleton area, and he and I support educational reform. When do you think President Obama would likely lay out, and what's your thought on him laying out a year-round school calendar? In essence, that would be in session 2 months, off a month, and then rotating that three-month schedule throughout the year. That's the first question. Second question is, we know that there's a lot of regulation needed in our system. Do you think that President Obama will put in people to regulate employment-related monies like TIF districts and incentives to employers to hire people, which should spur on the economy? Those are my questions, and please,
the answer
always
is
forward to
no,
hear your responses.
Is neither, because neither tends to be a federal question. And so the first one having to do with the year-round school districts would be something to decide it mostly by local government, but by school districts. I mean, the state could make a decision in that area, but states have not done that. States are technically in control of education, but the school district would make decisions on whether to have year-round schools or not. And in other states, some school districts have year-round schools while others don't in their own state. In terms of year-round schools. In terms of TIF districts, in particular, TIF districts would not have anything to do with the federal government. TIF districts are fundamentally state, and the decision on TIF districts in terms of where the tax money goes is a state determination. Many states don't have TIF districts. Wisconsin does, Minnesota does. But TIF districts is what's called creative financing, in which the money then goes to the government that forms the TIF district to pay back the bonds that are then issued to do infrastructure, presumably, in the TIF district. The only thing with TIF districts that the federal government would be involved in is whether those bonds are tax-exempt or not. Some are and some aren't, because they are not general obligation bonds, as we call them, which are all tax exempt, but rather they're industrial revenue bonds. They're treated like industrial revenue bonds, of which now since 1986, some are and some are not. So the only federal government action in the TIF district area would be whether these are tax exempt or not, federally tax exempt or not.
Okay, thanks for the call. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Just a note to our producers, we're moving on from the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and so no more calls on that. We're going to, with so many other things to cover, and we have so little time left in the hour, we would like to move on. 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political for Monday, the 29th of December, almost 2009. Not quite, though. Still a couple of days left in the old year. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today, and my guest, Professor Miller from the UW-Stevens Point Political Science Department, is with me on the telephone to talk about political issues. Let's talk about Caroline Kennedy for just a moment. Another story popped up over the weekend. She is hoping to become the appointee who will take over for Senator Clinton when she is sworn in as the next Secretary of State. And there are a lot of people who are urging Governor Patterson of New York to appoint her. On the other hand, there are some quite a few other people, including former Democratic vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro, who are saying that New York needs a more experienced member of Congress to fill that Senate seat. So let's talk about that for just a little bit.
Well, John, that's the nub of the issue. And you know, certainly she is very well known. I mean, you know, being the daughter of John Kennedy would carry the Kennedy name, especially given that her uncle is ill, you know, from Massachusetts. But on the other hand, she does not have much experience to go into the U.S. Senate. And so there's some questions about that. She's not done herself for, you know, too much good, because at first she was only responding through press spokesman to the press. Now that after that was criticized, she is responding to the press, but in generalities. She won't release any financial records until after being appointed. So there are issues with that. And there are other individuals who have indicated their interest as well, including a couple U.S. House members from New York, as well as Andrew Cuomo, who is currently Attorney General, and the son of the former governor. And he was married to Mrs. Kennedy's cousin, Carrie Kennedy, but they're divorced now. So it's all sort of connected.
Yeah, it's that whole financial disclosure thing has always kind of thrown me a little bit. She's a Kennedy. We assume she's rich. What else do we need to know about that?
Well, I think they wanted to know. I think it's not only that she's rich, but what specific holdings that they have, you know, in terms of what connections they have to various companies and things like that. And so they wanted a full disclosure of that. And she,
when we say they, who are we talking about?
It's primarily the news media are the ones that have been asking.
Yeah, let's be clear about this. This is another one of those questions that the only people who seem to really care about it, I mean, if you do surveys, the only people who really care about it are reporters.
Right. I don't know who else in terms of political personnel the governor has not asked for it, as far as I'm aware, but certainly the news media has requested.
Well, there's your 24-hour news cycle.
Right, and they have requested it, and she has said she will release it after being appointed.
Okay, well, that'll take care of that. We're going to.
And she said she was hurt during the financial crisis, but not as bad as other people. That she still owns her house, and their husband still is employed.
Well, good for her. You know, I mean, I'll be able to sleep better tonight anyway. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some more phone calls. We do have some lines available for you if you'd like to talk about some political news. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 13 before 10, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this morning. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on here on the Ideas Network. After 5 on At Issue, Ben Maron's guest says many people live in what he calls suburban toxins, rampant materialism, hyper-competition, transactional friendships, and a shallow spiritual life. Look at how to put culture and spirituality into suburban life. That's on At Issue with Ben Maron's after 5 o'clock today. This hour, it's All Things Political, And my guest is Ed Miller, professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. 800-486-8655 is the number to call to join the program. Let's take a call from Steve in Broadhead next. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I've got a question. What the cap on Social Security, why can't that has never been taken off, you know, for the wage limit? And it seems discriminatory against the lower income people, and then the higher income, what is it, like 90 or 100,000 now on up? They don't have to pay on the Social Security tax.
Right.
What effect would that have on the economy?
Right. The Social Security tax is it's indexed, and so that amount goes up each year. So this coming year, I think it's $102,000 that you don't have to pay above that. To increase that cap is one of the recommendations that has been made to deal with the problem of Social Security, which is a far less problem, actually, than is Medicare. But anyway, the reason the cap is there the cap was much lower, you know, of course, many years ago, is because the payout from Social Security, when you get Social Security, is really more oriented to the lower income, middle income groups. And so in the upper income groups, the amount that is paid out to them sort of levels off. And so consequently, the argument is that for fairness sake, that there would be a cap on how much they would be paying. On the other hand, given the need to finance Social Security and their ability to pay, some people believe that either the cap should be removed or the cap at least should be raised in that area. As a matter of fact, there is even discussion, and Barack Obama discussed this in the campaign, and that of raising the cap, but not raising it for the full percentage. But above that particular cap, there would be an added smaller percentage that richer people would pay. But for poorer people, there would be an exemption. So on your first X amount of income, I forgot what they had cited, first X amount of income, you would pay no Social Security taxes on that amount, which would make Social Security a bit more progressive than it is now.
Let's be clear, just so we understand what we're talking about here. Everybody who makes money on the books. I mean, there's certainly a cash and barter economy in this country that's a whole other show. But everybody who makes money on the books, in other words, they get a check that somebody has cut as a payroll check. There's a payroll tax. Everybody pays that.
Only up to $102,000.
But the first, you pay it on the first $102,000 of your income. So past that, you pay on the first $102,000, but you don't pay on the next however many $100,000
right.
or million
so,
you
so,
make in a year.
So if you don't pay on anything else you make money on, stocks, bonds, and things like that. But
right.
The only thing you pay it on is earned
income. It's payroll.
Income.
Yeah, it's
and,
payroll.
And
it's
if
a payroll
you make,
tax.
For example, let's just $204,000 a year, then essentially you're paying on your total amount half the percentage of your income that somebody who makes $102,000 or under $102,000 would pay. So therefore, it's considered a regressive tax.
Yeah, and the other thing is that let's say you're a married couple and your combined income is $102,000. You each that would mean let's say you each made $51,000. You would be paying on every dollar of that because it's individual. It's an individual income situation.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
It's an individual situation, married couples will lose money essentially on it. Once one of the spouses dies,
just to go back, one of Steve's questions was what effect would this have on the economy? Well, the answer to that would be none, because there wouldn't be any economic stimulus from removing the cap or changing any of the regulations on how the payroll tax is paid. Would there?
Well, it would have a negative effect on the economy right at the moment, because what it would do is it would take more unless government spent the money. But if government didn't spend the money and taxed more of the money, then there would be less demand in the economy. But if government spent the equal amount that was being taxed, the demand would be the same, and it wouldn't have much effect on the economy.
All right, let's move on and take a call from Kathy in Waupaca next. Kathy, there we go. Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I grew up in Illinois, and I do kind of keep an eye on Illinois politics. I'd like to know what your guest thinks is the likelihood of Governor Blagojevich being removed from office, first off. And I hate that Illinois politics comes to equal Chicago politics, because my father was involved in politics downstate. Chicago politics is a whole different ballgame. I just hate Illinois gets tarred with that brush. That's all I have. Thanks.
Right. I don't know. I know that the lieutenant governor yesterday, Pat Quinn, said that he believed that he would be removed from office by Lincoln's birthday, February 12th. But it gets to be complex because, I mean, they can impeach him, but the federal attorney has requested that a number of individuals, including Rahm Emanuel and Valerie Jarrett, who were the two members of the administration, plus some other people, not be called by this panel because they would be involved in the federal case. And he is concerned that if you're called by the panel and that you testify at the panel, that could taint the case.
I think we lost Kathy, and we need to get rid of the beeping. Thank you.
Okay. So that's a problem in that regard. And Fitzgerald, who's the federal prosecutor, is really concerned about the case. But what it sounds like is that they're pushing to remove him certainly from office.
Well, he would be, let's see, the last, how many former, here's a trivia question, how many former governors of Illinois are now behind bars?
Well, a lot of them.
I think there's four. I think four out of the last five have ended up going to jail.
Yeah,
I could be wrong on that.
In jail. I mean, there's been a number of
fun times in Illinois, by golly. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. We have I don't know how big a deal this is. This is another one of those. Well, there's a metaphor for this, but I won't say it on the air. We've got this kerfuffle in the Republican Party over the Obama parody that was sent out by one of the people who wants to be the next GOP chairman, and it was a parody, a song parody that first hit the national scene as a piece on the. On the Rush Limbaugh program. I think you know what I'm talking about. It's
right.
The Barack the Magic Negro song, and this was included on a CD that was sent out to members of the RNC who would be voting on the next chair by one of the person who's a candidate. Meanwhile, you've got the GOP chairman, the current one, the outgoing one, saying this is horrible. He's shocked that anybody would send this out. And then you've got Mr. Blackwell, the former Secretary of State of Ohio, an African-American person himself, saying this isn't really such a big deal and we really shouldn't be paying any attention to that.
Right, and I think that it'll be an issue within the Republican Party in terms of selection of chair. But given the number of international and domestic issues, I think it'll probably rest there.
And we've also, there's a story popped up, I got this from CNN.com this morning about, it was a kind of an analysis piece on Barack Obama's executive orders and which Bush policies he may reverse almost immediately upon taking office. And without reading the whole article, it highlights some, for example, stem cells, offshore or oil drilling policies, abortion policies, and things like that. This is pretty common, isn't it? When you've got a change in party, a president comes in and immediately changes some things that the previous occupant had as executive orders.
Right, and in a number of cases, especially those executive orders that were highlighted in the campaign. And there were a number of executive orders. There were also a number of executive orders as well as regulations that were issued by the Bush administration right at the end. They went through the regulatory processes. There was a large number of regulations that were begun about a month and a half ago so that they would be able to be issued. Some of those will be reversed, as you mentioned. The stem cell is one of the most notable ones because a number of the researchers claim that we're being stunted in stem cell research in the United States. And some of the stem cell research is being financed by the states, particularly California and Massachusetts. But as you know, they're having tremendous budgetary problems as well, so they may not be able to be to continue that. So I think that will probably go. Oil, you know, is one of the issues of the oil drilling. But right now, probably companies will not drill even without the oil, without the executive order, because the fact is the price of oil has dropped so low that they don't have the financial incentives to drill.
Well, we're about out of time, so I think I'm not going to introduce any new topics at this point. We don't have enough time for it. So I'll just say, Professor Miller, thanks a lot. I hope you have a happy New Year.
Thank you.
What's your big New Year's resolution? Do you have one?
Well, I hope to stay warm in this weather.
Okay. Well, Stevens Point, yeah, you're pretty far north there. So try and stay warm, and thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Ed Miller is professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. He was the guest on this program this morning. By the way, if you would like to hear the whole thing again, you have a number of options for that. You can get a recording of this program by calling the radio store at 800-747-7444. You can ask for program 1229D, as in done. And or you can just go to WPR.org and you can listen to the whole thing over again over the Internet. Rhonda Fanning produced this program, and we had a cast of thousands helping to get it on the air. Mimi Notstein and Steve Johnston, and then Katie Mattson was there too. And Rob Ferret's name showed up on my script someplace, so we'll give him credit as well. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network.